In a world in which movies struggle to find plot, Alan Adams of The Main Edge breaks it down for you in Pass the Popcorn. Now on Downtown with Rich Kimball.
That's right. It's time to talk movies. Pass the Popcorn. Alan Adams from The Main Edge brought to you every Monday at this time by Bangor Mall Cinema 10, 557 Stillwater Avenue, Bangor, where they have a film for everybody in the family. Hello, Alan.
Hello, sir. How are you?
Wonderful. How was your Thanksgiving and your weekend?
Thanksgiving was great. Spent the day down in Cherryfield with my in-laws. And then we hosted my family on Sunday.
Nice.
For a little bit of dinner. And, we spent last night watching the Grey Cup. So
yeah, and let's talk about that for a moment. What a game, what a finish to it.
Man, it's been a couple in a row that have been real just dynamite games. Because, last year, they went to overtime, wound up being 36-33. And so, obviously, I was basically thinking, well, it can't possibly live up to last year's experience. And from the start, pouring down snow there in Ottawa, like it was really, beautiful to look at, but not necessarily the sort of thing that would make you believe that a good football game was going to. I was assuming, I look forward to the 6-3 final. And then things just went nuts. Like record long touchdown reception, record long fumble recovery, like a 109-yard fumble recovery for a touchdown. All this happening in the final minutes, the Stamps are, they're up by a score, they're driving, they're basically gonna put it away. We're looking at a dagger touchdown, and a guy fumbles, and they take it back to the house, and all of a sudden it's like, oh, so this is a game. And then they immediately go back and score again to take the lead. The Argos do, and then Bo Levi Mitchell starts marching the Stampeders down the field, and it's like, oh my gosh, is this going to happen? Is this going to happen? They're in field goal range. It's like, okay, just get yourself situated, kick the field goal. We'll go to overtime again. It'll be great. And then Mitchell launches one into the end zone, into what appeared to be triple coverage, gets picked, and that's the game. And that's the Argos win the Grey Cup. Ricky Ray becomes the winningest quarterback in Grey Cup history. And Bo Levi Mitchell, you don't want to say a guy is tainting his legacy, but that's two cup losses in a row. Yeah. Like that's got to sting a guy.
Absolutely. We included your Grey Cup preview in the Best Of show yesterday.
I noticed. I actually heard part of it. I was really excited about that. I didn't know that was happening, but I was just, it was kind of an honor. I was really pleased.
There you go. Now, you also managed to get to a couple of movies, and both of them are movies I want to see. Actually, Abby and Graham went to see Coco and loved it.
Oh, Coco. I'm a fanboy for Pixar anyway. I'm a believer that with very few exceptions, they can do no wrong. They have a wonderful ability to sort of strike that balance and create really like what would have to be considered. I call it, it's popular art. Like it's not, it's not the sort of derivative dreck that sometimes gets aimed at kids. They make real complex, engaging films that are, narratively interesting and visually stunning. Like this was a beautiful movie to look at. And they basically set the model for what everyone else wants to do. For those who are unfamiliar, Coco is the story of a young boy named Miguel living in a small village in Mexico with his family. They're a family of shoemakers, and they're shoemakers because his great-great-grandfather apparently left his great-great-grandmother and his great-grandmother, who was a young girl at the time, to pursue a career in music. And so the great-great-grandmother decides to, become a shoemaker, and that's how they're going to make their living, and they gradually build this sort of wonderful family business where they live a very successful life. But music is verboten in their household. But Miguel, all he wants is to be a musician. Like, he idolizes the legendary Mexican singer-songwriter Ernesto de la Cruz and has a little shrine built to him in the attic and the whole shebang. But he knows that his family doesn't approve. But when things come to a head on Dia de los Muertos, the Day of the Dead, he finds himself in the shrine of Ernesto de la Cruz, because his hometown is also de la Cruz's hometown. He lays hands on a guitar once owned by the great man and suddenly finds himself able to cross the veil and become engaged by the land of the dead, by the people who are returning to visit their loved ones. And he basically takes it upon himself. He's going to go on a quest to gain approval from the great man himself so that he might be able to pursue his dreams as a musician. I'm not going to go too much farther into it because there are a couple of twists and turns that I think are better left unsaid. But suffice it to say, it's super engaging on a storytelling level. Like their movies almost always are. But this one is particularly good in terms of not necessarily relying on previously created characters or anything like that. It's very much its own creation in a way that I don't think Pixar has necessarily done before. Like it handles what is really a very important cultural tradition for the country of Mexico in a very sensitive and thoughtful way. It's one of the most beautiful looking animated movies I think I've ever seen, particularly like the Mexican village is rendered wonderfully in a style that is recognizably Pixar. But when the crossover happens to the Land of the Dead, it's absolutely like stunning. It's stunning to look at. There's this wonderful, like surreal quality. The character design is top notch as always, but it's the details in the backgrounds that really sort of serve to create this world that's just absolutely amazing to look at.
And Abby said got a little dusty in there.
It 100% does. A couple of times, actually. But Pixar's, you know, they know how to push the buttons. But again, and I've said this before on the air, as long as you earn the emotional response, I'm okay with it. Like,
right.
I think that's the most important part. Like, it's not, they don't go through the motions. They really invest in making you invest in the characters that they're creating and the story that they're telling. So, it's probably not top shelf. It's probably not like top five, but it's top 10 as far as Pixar is concerned.
Now, what about before the movie? And this is the only negative people are saying what's being described as an interminable Frozen featurette before Coco.
Oh my God. Olaf's Frozen Adventure, man. Like, just shoot me. It was one of those things, and I got no problem with Frozen. Like, I get it. I understand that kids are fascinated with it. But my understanding is that this began life as a made-for-TV sort of holiday special, and then for whatever reason, they decided they were going to tack it on to the front of Coco, which one basically means that we don't get a Pixar short at the beginning of the movie, which is, you know, they've only, you know, won numerous Academy Awards for their short animation. So why not trade it in for, you know, half a dozen songs, you know, of, you know, 10 minutes of Josh Gad wandering around. But the biggest issue is it's interminable. It's 21 minutes long. It feels like twice that. It's basically, they could tell the story in half the time. Like, if that was a 10-minute thing, it would have been like, okay, great, in and out. That's precisely the amount of time you should spend telling this story. Instead, we get 20 minutes where people are genuinely looking around. It's like, are we in the right theater?
Oh,
like, what
that's
is
not good.
What is happening? So yes, Olaf's Frozen Adventure, not so good.
Right.
I would say if 20 minutes or so after the start time listed for Coco, you will have a better time.
All right. How about Roman J. Israel Esquire? Kind of a different type of Denzel Washington film.
Yeah, and full disclosure, I am 100% Team Denzel. I love me some Denzel, and this is a really high quality performance from Mr. Washington. Like, this is a really great, great performance from him. Unfortunately, the movie around him doesn't necessarily rise up to the level that he's operating. He plays the titular Roman J. Israel. He's a lawyer, an attorney who's been working for some 30 years as a one half of a two-man sort of criminal defense firm. He's the behind the scenes nuts and bolts guy, and his partner is the sort of face of the franchise, the courtroom guy, the chief litigator, that blah, blah, blah. And that arrangement, he's got his own system. He's a very eccentric, very idiosyncratic and quirky kind of guy, coming from a tradition of legal activism from the, you know, from the late, early 70s, like really having that sort of go get 'em, like let's change the world kind of attitude. But when his partner takes ill, he kind of finds himself at a crossroads, and the firm needs to be shut down. Bring in a young hotshot lawyer by the name of George Pierce, played by Colin Farrell, who's actually really great here, to do the deed. Roman J. Israel starts looking for other work. He winds up going to a legal nonprofit, where there's this young idealistic attorney named Maya, played by Carmen Ejogo, who's also very good. Kind of changes her outlook a little bit, you know, being one of those guys like at one point she actually says, in reference to one of her colleagues who kind of makes fun of Roman J. Israel, because he's like tics and quirks and, you know, wears oversized suits and is just generally off. The guy calls him a freak, and she essentially says, you stand on his shoulders. Like, it's that kind of relationship, that sort of, not hero worship, but in that same sort of conversation. He winds up getting brought in by George Pierce to work for him at his much larger firm, and kind of starts to lose himself a little bit and starts to make some decisions that aren't necessarily in line with the principles that he has lived his life by for so many years. And it really complicates his life to an extent where things kind of threaten to go off the rails. And, you know, he's changing the lives of these people around him without really knowing it. But in the end, his own choices are the ones, I think, ultimately are the ones that kind of come back to haunt him a little bit. Like I said, he's a phenomenal talent. And he's great here. One of the best parts about it is, I love Denzel Washington, but he definitely has performances, good performances, where you never stop seeing Denzel Washington. Do you know what I mean?
Yep.
He has that sort of, he's just got that sort of magnetic charisma that's hard to kind of, you can't hide a light under a bushel. Do you know what I mean? But with this role, like whether it's the physicality or the vocal inflection, he darts his gaze around. He wears these oversized glasses, the oversized suits that make him seem thicker than he is. And just, he brings all these sort of characteristics together in a way where you actually do forget that you're looking at Denzel Washington, which is pretty great. Like with his sort of eccentricities to kind of subvert the charisma that he brings to the table whenever he's on screen. So he's great. Colin Farrell is wonderful. He's hit or miss for me. As a rule, he's really good here. Ejogo is really, really good. She's a very talented young actress. So talented that she can hang in pretty much every scene that she's in with Denzel, which is, you know, that's saying something. But again, ultimately, writer-director Dan Gilroy, he's written a bunch of stuff, but this is only his second directorial feature. He did Nightcrawler back in 2014, which was excellent. But for whatever reason, like, the pieces are there for a really strong, interesting legal thriller, but the story just doesn't quite measure up to the performances that are put up there. That being said, it's very much a movie worth seeing. Like, it's not a bad movie by any stretch of the imagination. It's actually pretty good. But you can see the excellent movie that it almost was, right? And that's a little frustrating.
Alan Adams sharing his thoughts on Roman J. Israel, Esquire, and Coco here on Pass the Popcorn this afternoon. Thank you, Alan.
My pleasure.